What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm senior editor Devinder Hardwarth. This week, I'm joined by senior writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Going okay. And also podcast producer Ben Elman's here. Hey, Ben.
Hey there, everybody.
Hello. It's a big, big week for us because we've got the Apple drops. We've got Apple's fall slate of devices, probably more to come. But they announced their M5 hardware, including the 14-inch MacBook Pro, the new iPad Pro, and a revamped Vision Pro, which is pretty surprising. So we'll be diving into all that stuff and kind of what it all means. I also really wanted to get Sam here because his review of the Asus ROG Xbox Ally X is up. And I want to talk about that thing, and we can sort of like reassess the state of Xbox every week. It just seems worse and worse for Microsoft. So I don't know. It's going to be a constant conversation. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. And we'll always take your questions, you know, there. That's always fun. And any questions you send could be used in our Ask Engadget section. You can also drop in Thursday mornings, typically around 10:30 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel for our live stream. Join us. Sometimes we'll show off gadgets. Nothing this week, I think. But, you know, sometimes we do that, and we'll often do Q&A with the audience. So let's just get right into Apple's new M5 hardware. There's really not much to say about the M5 itself, Sam, from what I've seen. You know, we've been reading all the press releases from Apple. I've heard some murmurs from within the company. The M5 chip seems like it's slightly faster. They're kind of saying, hey, it is the new single core CPU king, like in just in terms of raw speed. But it seems like the big upgrade this time is the GPU because it has real-time ray tracing baked in, which is typically a feature of like, you know, NVIDIA's graphics cards or AMD's like high-end graphics cards. So there's a bigger graphics push this year, but compared to M4, I'm probably not like a huge leap for a lot of things. We haven't tested the hardware yet. We haven't seen anything. These are basically just chip drop-ins. The MacBook Pro 14-inch looks the same. The Vision Pro is a little different. I'll talk about that. The iPad Pro is basically the same. Any initial thoughts, Sam, based on what we've seen so far?
No. And I think it's important to kind of realize it's like when Apple announces new stuff like that, you got to pay attention to how they do it.
Yeah.
And so notice that these things just got announced as press releases. They didn't get announced as part of like WWDC or like the big iPhone. So if Apple is announcing stuff and it's not part of like a big live stream or a big presentation, you can kind of like tell the importance of the actual product. And furthermore, it's kind of also kind of telling to see what we didn't get because there is a new M5 MacBook Pro 14-inch, but there is no 16-inch version. That's still going to be on the M4 chip, using the M4 chip, I believe.
Specifically, I asked some folks questions about that, and they reminded me, because I forget this. Apple has been doing this for the last few years, where the base chip just gets to the 14-inch, and then when they have the Pro chip and the Max chip and everything, then we get the 16.
Right, and that's a really good point, because there is no M5 Pro or M5 Max or anything like that. And so, hey, you know, they're pushing out a new chip, some new architecture with, you know, improved GPU performance, which is, I don't think anyone's going to complain about that.
Yeah.
But the device is, as far as I can tell, not any different. And so it's like, you know, they're kind of pushing out some of the mainstream stuff right now. And then if you are looking for like the higher end versions of that, you're probably going to want to sit tight for a little while longer.
It makes more sense than what happened last year, Sam. Wasn't last year just the M4 on the iPad Pro first?
Yeah, it came out on the iPad Pro, which is like, you know, don't get me wrong, like more performance is good, but like I think even for iPad Pro users, they're not like fully saturating the capabilities of that device. And to have like, hey, flagship chip on a tablet didn't feel quite right. But so at least they're getting it. Yeah. Hey, it's now on the MacBook Pro 14-inch. And the iPad Pro as well. So, hey, there is that.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, the MacBook Pro and the iPad Pro, pretty much the same devices as before, slightly faster. The Vision Pro is kind of interesting because they haven't touched that since that thing launched a couple of years ago. That originally had an M2 chip in it. So, jumping up to the M5, that's a big leap. It's still $34.99. We noticed a couple of things.
That price is going to be...
It's not... They made that mistake. And I'm going to bring this back up from when we talked about the Vision Pro. Apple made a huge mistake being like, look at this amazing new thing that you can buy in our store, because there are commercials for it, right? They marketed it because that's who they are as a company now, rather than be like, this is a vision of the future. This is something we're working on. This is not for you. And the Vision Pro was never for consumers, right? You could go to the store and try it out. but for the love of God, don't buy that thing. Not right. if you're.
It was the most polished dev kit I've ever seen. Yeah. But yeah. To kind of push it out and be like, hey, this thing is for everyone. I think that was. It was more of a messaging mistake than necessarily like an issue with the product itself.
And they, I mean, Apple has had that problem a couple of times, right? The whole, a lot of the Apple Intelligence stuff, when they message that we have a shiny new Siri coming to you, what was that, last year? And then they had to scale that back and be like, oh, that's going to take some time.
Right. And we talked about this. Last year, when they made this big push for Apple Intelligence, sales of the new iPhones were kind of, you know, lackluster. This year, when they talk about, you know, cool new hardware and all that stuff, and they, you know, got new iPhone designs and stuff like that, oh, magically, sales are way up. So I think, you know, the, Apple, bless them for trying, but like, you know, we can see kind of where at least people's interests are. And also you look at Apple's core strengths at, you know, historically what they've been good at.
They gave the people what they want, and what the people wanted was a wide angle selfie camera.
Well, they wanted new hardware features, right? Because Apple is, I think, for a lot of people, first and foremost, a hardware company. I think the other thing was Apple made that gamble last year, assuming the AI hype trickled down to everybody, right? Like, is it online brain all into AI and Silicon Valley brain? Or is it, do normal people actually give a crap? I don't think they did. And we got stats. There was a story from earlier this year that the same thing is happening to Microsoft's Copilot features. Mm-hmm. The companies are pushing them, but people aren't like broadly jumping on all these AI features. We'll talk about what's going on with Sora, you know, the Sora app and everything with OpenAI, like how they're getting some numbers, but mainly because it's a shiny new thing rather than AI being shoved into a thing that people already know and like. But yeah, the new Vision Pro is it's honestly a lot faster than the original. They said an interesting thing that it processes 10% more pixels than the original model, even though the displays are exactly the same. So the pixels in the display doesn't seem like anything has changed. Those are still really sharp micro OLED screens. But I guess maybe the rendering resolution, because it's a much more powerful chip, they can probably scale that up a little more. That's probably what I'm thinking, but that's the sort of stuff Apple doesn't really talk about much, like native resolution of that display to what it's scaling up to. It's also coming with a dual strap now, a dual mesh strap, which covers both the back and the top of your head. And when I originally tested the Vision Pro on Apple's campus, they had like some sort of like dual strap thing, but they shipped that thing with a single strap.
And again, there's an optional, you know, extra head strap that you had to buy, which I think was also a little bit of a mistake.
The Belkin released, they did have like a slightly more optional one, but also Belkin released like a more comfortable dual strap one. But again, that was a messaging thing, because I'm pretty sure somebody on the marketing team was like, oh, we want this to be a cool, seamless device for people. It has to have one strap, it has to be clean. Can't be going over people's heads and messing up their hair. And that really, that's a symptom where messaging works. That's an issue where messaging works against the actual technology, right? Because a lot of people complain Vision Pro is heavy. I think it's kind of heavy. But once you add a top strap and you kind of balance out that weight, as we've seen on the PSVR 2 and a lot of other VR headsets, you can make a bulky headset feel comfortable just as long as you're distributing weight well. So anyway.
Dual the issue is that they were really concerned with the aesthetics.
They were. And how do you market this to people?
Yeah. It's not just so it doesn't mess up your hair. It's that in all the marketing pictures, they want it to look like, you know, a really sleek, basically like ski goggles sort of situation. And you never see ski goggles with a middle strap, because that is what takes it from like sleek and cool looking to like, is this a medical device?
For sure. I think that's a whole thing, like, and this is what has been hitting Apple, is like marketers have had more and more influence over their messaging, you know, and over how products are even like shown off, because it's kind of the main thing of the company. But it wasn't always this way, right? Like sometimes it used to be design.
If you go back, this is one of Steve Jobs' original complaints about like the, you know, corporate enterprise development cycle, is that after a certain time, the marketers keep rising and rising, and then they have kind of an outsized influence compared to, say, like the engineering team or some of the developers. And that can cause some issues when it comes to releasing new products.
You could also argue that Apple's previous problem was also they were too design brain heavy, you know, like when Johnny Ive was fully in charge and put the recharge port of the Magic Mouse on the bottom. That's the sort of thing where people laugh at it. And like only a crazy person who lives in like, you know, their minimalist, you know, a pod with an aluminum table like Johnny Ive, only that person can think that makes sense. And that used to be an issue with Apple. Now it's kind of the opposite way. Anyway, Vision Pro, still not for everybody, but they have made that change. We noticed they're not taking trade-ins of the original Vision Pro so that you can upgrade to the new one, which is annoying, but again, goes back to the whole thing that this is a developer kit. Like,
yeah, also, yeah. How many people do you really think have bought a Vision Pro, yes, and then are going to upgrade to this new one just for that chip? I don't see a lot of people doing that, on top of like not having a lot of them in the wild as
all
is.
Reports that Vision Pro sales were pretty low, like pretty lackluster, again, because who expected people to jump on this thing? That's insane. But when Apple takes in devices, when you trade it in, they typically refurbish it, spiff it up, and then resell it to people. That market isn't there. The market of people who would buy a used Vision Pro, if they're not even jumping on the Vision Pro as it is, I don't think shaving off $1,000 at that thing is really going to, you know, entice somebody over. Not until Apple releases like $1,000 or less headset like that, that's going to be the mainstream product for them. Vision Pro is still its own thing. It is kind of, it's nice to see a refresh, because whenever I try that thing on all the time still to test out the immersive stuff, and sometimes just to like lounge in bed, I'm always amazed that, man, these are the best displays I've ever seen on a product, because they are so clear, so like, and so close to your eyes. That stuff is still good. It never feels slow, but it does feel weird that we're going up and up and up in chips and the Vision Pro is still stuck in M2. So, hey, new Vision Pro doesn't really mean much, because we need the apps. We need more content. This doesn't mean much for the Vision Pro space as a whole. Any other thoughts, Sam, about what Apple's up to?
Just one minor thought, because you mentioned the weight before. And so, like, you know, we were looking this in Slack, and a bunch of, you know, in Gadget staff, people were like, I think it's about 150 grams heavier than the last one. And so, like we said before, it's not entirely sure if all of that is due to the new dual knit band or not. But it's interesting to see that. I think for anyone looking at like a, you know, 0.5 generation improvement, it would have been nice to see weight reductions instead of increases, but there we are.
And not taking trade-ins is the biggest proof positive that they thought of this as, you should be writing this down as a business expense.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can like knock this off on your taxes, so it's like essentially free, or, you know, you can call it, you know, offset some revenue or something like that by calling this as a business expense, that would be make it a lot more interesting. But yeah,
what a hero. He's back in just a couple minutes.
All right, Sam, you can finish your thought, because I
That was it. I was just kind of talking about how
it got heavier instead of lighter.
Let's go ahead.
Talk about the Apple Smart Display.
Well, they have not released anything. This is just a rumor. This is
right.
Just a rumor.
So, just to be clear, this is just a rumor.
You would think that they would fully release this when they have the smarter Siri and they can say, hey, this is how you interact with it.
The rumor is that Apple is working on a smart display of some sort, kind of like your Nest Hub or something like that. And, you know, it could cost around $350. But I think, Ben, you just made the point, is that, like, they cannot release this thing until they have a better version of Siri. Because I think even, you know, the most diehard Apple person has to admit at this point, there's, like, the limitations of Siri compared to Gemini or Alexa Plus even. It's just, it's not there in a way that you need it to be for a smart home, smart display based device.
I think the timeline, the rumor timelines we're hearing, a smarter Siri is going to come next year at some point, maybe spring, maybe around WWDC or right before it. So, and it also sounds like Apple's going to have more hardware events, like different events for different types of phones. Like the next iPhone E, you know, will be spring or something when they can release a slightly cheaper one. But yeah, you're right. We need a smarter Siri. That would also go hand in hand with a display like this. I have been looking at these things a little more just because, like, I have space on my kitchen counter. I'm like, I wish something were here that could be useful. You have the Google devices. You have the Amazon devices. Apple could certainly play in that space. Do you guys care about smart displays at all?
I do. I have a couple. I have one in my kitchen, and I have one next to my bed. And you know, I've said this to a lot of people. Like, the way I think about it is that this is a smart photo display that does bonus stuff, and that's how I think about it. And like, you know, I definitely use voice controls to turn my lights on and, you know, turn new music on and, like, you know, look up stuff when I'm cooking and all that. And so, you know, that at its core functionality, that is definitely something I like to have around. In terms of just like additional features, I'm not quite there yet, partially because, you know, I live in a condo, and so I don't have like, you know, I don't have home security cameras that I need to monitor and stuff like all the time. So, you know, that stuff is kind of lost on me.
So I'd also say that Apple is a company that I trust marginally more to interact with like a smart display or have something that's always listening. I do say marginally these days because they have been doing some other stuff, like taking the ice tracker app off of the App Store, and they've strayed a bit from the company that was putting up billboards saying like, we're the only one who cares about your privacy.
Right. I mean, they have a partnership with OpenAI, so if you want to use ChatGPT on your iPhone, you can do that.
Yeah. But like, you know, when they were originally talking about the smarter Siri, they were talking about how you kind of have like a personal virtual machine that like could keep your data like a little bit siloed. I don't know where that went. I think that that might have been a little bit pie in the sky for them.
That's probably where it's going, because let me tell you, Ben, we'll talk about what Microsoft is up to next. They want the same thing. Everybody wants that. Everybody wants a little AI assistant that's sitting on your shoulder, looking at what you're doing and like just helping you out. And again, virtualized containers for running apps and stuff. That's, they're all going to
right. And I think, you know, yeah, we will get to that point. Not in the not too distant future, because one of the things that like we've noticed kind of as a trend in the last year or two is that, you know, because chips and stuff are getting stronger, NPUs and AI accelerators and stuff like that, there is more AI processing happening on devices without needing to like, you know, ping a server in the cloud. And so, you know, as far as data privacy and data protection security that goes, you know, I would definitely love to see more of that, because I think, you know, if you're asking stuff about like, you know, home security footage or stuff like that, it'd be nice to just, oh, everything is local. I don't have to worry about my data being sent elsewhere.
That's a big thing. And, you know, when Apple initially announced Apple Intelligence, they talked about their private cloud array too. Like, they've done things that even when stuff gets sent to the cloud, even when OpenAI stuff gets sent to the cloud from when you talk to Siri on your phone right now, which is a current feature, that's more protected than using the OpenAI app on its own or going through ChatGPT or anything. So there's all that. Yeah, anything else we want to mention among Apple stuff? We have not tested this hardware yet. We're looking to do it soon. I am interested in seeing what the new Vision Pro looks and feels like, but also that thing felt fast enough to me. Like, I don't think that's a huge deal.
The processing power of that device was not its biggest issue. Not even close.
Not even close. One thing I want to mention around the weight gain, it could be that they needed to change the cooling requirements for the M5 chip, because it probably runs hotter. It is drawing more power. Like, it is a 3-nanometer design. It's supposed to be super efficient, but that could be a thing. But also, I do wonder if they like felt less concerned about like the weight distribution if they knew you were going to have the top strap, like as a certainty.
Right.
So that's kind of a whole thing. Anyway, stay tuned for all of our reviews of this new Apple hardware coming at you soon. Sam, I want to move on to your Xbox Ally X review, because this is a thing that it definitely confused me quite a bit, right? Because there's the Xbox Ally, which is the $600 model. You reviewed the $1,000 more powerful model. And when we last talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I kind of felt like this whole category of $1,000 plus portable gaming PCs to be kind of missing the point of what people really liked about something,
or at least
like
very niche in terms of like who is actually like, you know, seeking these and demanding these.
For sure. But the Steam Deck was a success because it launched under $500. You spend a little more, you get a slightly nicer screen, but the performance was like still the same across the board. But yeah, all these companies just immediately push it up. Microsoft is going through a lot of console trouble right now. We don't know what the hell they're kind of doing in the console world anymore. They've come out there to respond to rumors. Like, that is a weird thing. They've responded to rumors saying that, hey, we're still working on Xbox hardware. We still have a partnership with AMD. All that stuff is happening. It's kind of a weird time. Sam, what do you think of this Xbox Ally X? Is it worth $1,000? Is there a market for this thing?
I mean, just to answer that, I do really appreciate the improved performance of the device. And I was, you know, I was playing Cyberpunk on medium settings at, you know, getting pretty much like a pretty stable 55 to 60 FPS, which is pretty good. You know,
yeah,
obviously
yeah.
Cyberpunk's like a couple years old or a few years old at this point.
But it's
like,
a demanding
you know,
game.
It is still, so, you know, yeah, a pretty yeah. demanding game. And so to have that in a portable device is really nice. But we were, you know, we were talking, you know, before the stream about like the response to this has kind of been very, you know, divided. And I think that has to do a lot with, you know, where your perspective is and where you're coming from. Because if you're coming from like the, you know, $450 Switch 2 and you're looking at this as like a proper Xbox handhold, that's not quite right. Because not only did, you know, Asus do the hardware part, you know, Microsoft's main involvement was doing a lot of the software and some of the background services and how, you know, Windows 11 runs a little bit differently on this device. And at its core, it is still a handheld gaming PC. This is not a handheld console. And so it is not that, it is not really a true rival to the Nintendo Switch 2.
Sam, I've been told everything is an Xbox. I've been told over and over again, my TV is an Xbox. This computer is an Xbox. Any device that can run Xbox apps is an Xbox. So I
that's
think
true.
Like, this is the whole messaging problem we were talking about too. So things are at odds right now.
Yeah, and you know, Steven, like we were talking about this earlier. This goes back to the naming, the Asus ROG Xbox Ally X. Not too many X's, but it's also just too many brands and company names in that. And you know, they didn't even put the Microsoft tag in there, which is fine. They don't need it
because it's Xbox. Xbox.
But like,
means
you know, to your point, you know, and that is actually one of the things I do like about that. It's not, you know, a fully solved problem, but on the new ROG Xbox Ally X, there is a new full screen Windows experience. And kind of to your point, we're talking about how everything is an Xbox now. You know, they have created a new launcher system so that, hey, when you boot up the device, when you, you know, turn it on, you don't see that traditional Windows 11 desktop. You get booted right into a new full screen Xbox app. And then you have tabs for, you know, locally installed games, Xbox Game Pass, Xbox Game Cloud streaming. And then there's even like a little tab that you can install Steam or Battle.net or Epic Game Store. Just you hit that button and it downloads the Game Store automatically.
That's where it gets interesting. I don't want to like skip past that because now this is an Xbox device where Microsoft is giving you a shortcut to third party PC storefronts from other folks.
And they didn't have to do that. So I was kind of surprised to see that's like, oh, they're kind of acknowledging that like, hey, you know, this is a little bit more of an open device. We, you know, we're going to acknowledge that there are third-party game stores on there. But that said, you know, it's still very clear that, like, Microsoft would really, really love you to buy this device and a subscription to Xbox Game Pass. So you can still do it. Hey, if you want to do your cloud gaming, you can do that. And if you want to do remote play from your PC, you can do that too. And if you want to do your, you know, Xbox Game Pass local downloads and stuff like that, that's also an option. And that's all very, you know, easy to find, and there is that Xbox button on the device itself, which makes it very easy to, you know, switch between things and, you know, kind of adjust settings and stuff like that. And so you even get like all your, you know, gamertag friend profiles in there, and you can see your achievements and stuff like that. And so in that respect, it does feel a lot more like an Xbox, but this is not like a true, you know, game, the only thing you do is play games on this console type of device.
But kind of, this is where Microsoft should be headed. I think we talked about this last time, right? You are Microsoft. You are the Windows company. And your strength is interoperability. It's third-party access to things. Like, sure, maybe not everybody's going to jump to Steam or the Epic Store or whatever, but to have that power, to have that there, that's one reason somebody would be using your device and maybe then tap into your ecosystem a bit. The current rumors for whatever the next Xbox is, Microsoft did announce that they have this partnership with AMD. They're working on some like potentially killer hardware. The rumors are that thing could just be a Windows box, which goes back to what we were saying back in like, I think last year or earlier this year around the Xbox Series X. If Microsoft actually gave a damn, the Series X could be a Windows box right now. and that would actually be a great little gaming PC. They've already bumped the price up several times. I think they just don't want to do the software work for it. But Microsoft doesn't need to have like a closed console ecosystem.
Right. Anymore. And in fact, yeah. I think I would argue that they probably shouldn't, because that's one of the things that I think people appreciate about, you know, the Windows ecosystem, is that it is a lot more open to third party. Hey, if you just want to install a program, you can go to that company's website, download an installer, and just do that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's precisely it. And also, Microsoft has lost the console wars. Like, Microsoft is dead, down and out. Costco's out. There were rumors that Target and Walmart were also trying to get rid of, actual physical stock. But they are not playing in this game anymore. Like, Sony is so dominant with the PlayStation 5, and then Nintendo is just, like, printing money, selling Switches. Like, they were able to make people buy Switch hardware for years, hardware that was kind of obsolete even by the time it was initially released in 2017. So they know how to make closed ecosystems. They know how to get developers on board to their platforms. Microsoft kind of lost all that, unfortunately, in the console realm.
I think that's one of the kind of issues with like this ROG Xbox Ally X situation, is because it's not a true Xbox. It does have the Xbox name on it, so I'm going to count it as an Xbox. But it definitely feels like a bit of a stopgap measure between, you know, where the Xbox Series S and X are right now and where's the next, like, full next generation Xbox coming in a year or two and stuff like that. And then on top of that, it's like, you know, you can kind of feel that, like, I do like the direction that this new full screen Xbox experience is headed, but there are some kind of oddity parts, because you still have Asus's Armory Crate app on there as well. And you need to do that for certain things, like, you know, doing more manual fine tuning of settings if that's what you're going to do, or if you want to adjust the lights. And so it's weird to have, like, oh, there's two kind of control command center apps on the same device, and they're kind of fighting with each other a little bit. That said, one thing that, like, when you're talking about having this, like, you know, Windows box as a game console, one of the things that that Microsoft did for the ROG Xbox Ally X is that they tweaked some of the background surfaces in terms of just, like, reducing overhead and the, you know, other services and processes that are taking up performance power. And so I took the ROG Xbox Ally X and the Legion Go 2, same chip, basically the same specs, and I was seeing about 5 to 7%, maybe 10% on the very high end, better performance in the exact same games, exact same titles, exact same resolutions. And I think part of that is because of the tweaking that Microsoft has done to reduce the background surfaces. In fact, you know, when you turn the device on, it boots right up into that new full screen Xbox experience. If you want to get to the, you know, traditional Windows 11 desktop, you have to, like, press a button to kind of activate it, because it doesn't show up normally unless you want it there.
Like a Steam Deck, you have to go into desktop mode, right?
Right. And I think that's a good thing for, you know, a handheld gaming device. And it kind of shows that, like, you know, one avenue that Microsoft might be kind of trying to tackle, you know, a device that sort of has a dual nature as a game device, but it could also be used as a full, you know, Windows PC if you wanted to, you know, plug in a monitor, mouse, keyboard, all that.
Why? This is the thing. Microsoft is such a big company. I am honestly baffled as to how, like, they limit themselves sometimes. They did let Mr. Panos Panay spend tens of billions of their dollars on Surface devices, some of which eventually sold some money and really pushed the market forward for convertible PCs and stuff like that. But Microsoft is so... You look at the Steam Deck. You look at the success of the Steam Deck. Huh? Gaming PC handheld. That's interesting. Interesting that Valve, a company that barely makes hardware, was able to get that out the door. And you're Microsoft. That slimmed down version of Windows should have been a project, like, from then, from, like, the debut of the Steam Deck, to be like, hey, let's get on this, because this could be where things are headed, especially once they saw how fast those things were selling. There's totally that. I'm looking at something on the back of the ROG Xbox Ally X, Sam. It specifically says handheld console PC.
Yeah.
On the case. Mm-hmm. They labeled it console PC. Yeah.
You just touched on this a bit now, and it's like the crazy thing is, like, it feels like there's no, like, immediacy. There's no,
yeah.
You know, there's no just drive to be like, let's make our stamp on this. And it's taken so long to get to just the ROG Xbox Ally X, not even a proper, you know, Xbox, you know, first party homegrown gaming handheld. And it's just like, you know, the Switch came out in 2017, and then, you know, the Steam Deck has been around for many years at this point. And so it's like, it's weird to see that, like,
Microsoft
is like, they're dragging their feet, or they don't know what to do. And it's like causing confusion in terms of, you know, their strategy going forward. And that to me is the most perplexing thing about all of this.
We kind of hear this problem happen often in big companies, right? Every little group is like its own little fiefdom, right? So you have the Xbox gaming group, but you also have the Windows side of the team. And to make a device like this, the Windows people have to be like, we have to do more gaming now. Like, we have to build a gaming thing. And the Xbox people kind of have to admit that maybe they should help make PC gaming a bit better. Because the things you're talking about, Sam, like Microsoft actually did update the Xbox app on Windows PCs, on Windows 11. You can set up a mode where it automatically launches into that and into a big screen mode. So if you have a home theater, like if you have a gaming PC under your TV, you can set it up where as soon as that thing launches, it launches the Xbox app in a big screen mode, and you can use your controller or whatever to like pick a game and just get going. So they have done some of this work, but it's such a confused company. I envision a future where Microsoft does do an official handheld, but it is probably significantly cheaper, and maybe like the Surface devices serve as a sort of halo product to be like, hey, this is kind of what we want to do, and we don't want you guys to price gouge too much. You know, like maybe it's a $500, $600 handheld at that point. Again, there is an ROG Xbox Ally that is $600. So it's almost there. I feel like $500 is a sweet spot. But there's also rumors that the next console will probably be very expensive, right? If you want a proper fast box under your TV or wherever, probably going to start at $800, maybe more. But at that point, that gulf is just like, we have the handheld for the people who want that. Maybe it's dockable. Maybe it's as fast as an Xbox Series X today, but in a couple of years, or even a Series S. Maybe you can make that happen and find some success there.
Yeah, and that's one of the big concerns is that, like, you know, these gaming handhelds, they could be, but like for most people, they're not their primary device. They're not your laptop or your desktop where you're doing all your work on too. And so when devices were, you know, $500, you could be like, oh, okay, this thing costs, you know, half the price of my laptop. I can get this as like, you know, a peripheral machine for gaming on the couch. But when you're talking about prices, and like you said, there is still that like $600 regular non-X ROG Xbox Ally. But like when you're talking about a $1,000 device, it's like suddenly you're asking people to spend a lot of money on a primary gaming device that can't really be a primary everything device. And so I think that's where the kind of weird push and pull in terms of people's wallets are going to be.
And I'm also curious who's going to end up buying, you know, an $800 gaming machine when, especially like, this is in the Windows ecosystem. If you're going to spend $800, maybe just spend another couple of $100 and build your own PC or something. Like, the people who are deeply into that are going to end up doing that.
Yeah, and it's crazy because the Xbox Series X, some versions of it right now cost $700, $800.
Yeah.
Granted, those are the ones with like 2 terabytes of storage, but still, that's like, you know, the sticker shock is real.
Mm-hmm. It's to what you're saying, Ben, I think that's totally true. Building a PC is more expensive now than it was because of tariffs and a lot of the other stuff. If Microsoft can just be like, hey, here is a $800 box, the people who would buy the high-end console, right? They don't have a Pro for the Series X, but the people who would buy a PlayStation 5 Pro, which costs $750, those folks may just be like, yeah, I'm going to spend the big money to get the big box, the powerful box. Everybody else, $500 under handheld PC. I can see a future where that handheld PC is everything for a lot of people, especially if you can dock it easily and also stream games from it easily. So if you could like pair another controller to it, just like a Switch, you know, and stream games over Game Pass, over Xbox Cloud Streaming, like that's totally a thing. I've talked about GeForce Now and like how impressive that's become as a streaming service. So there is a future there if you have the internet to support it too. Overall, though, Sam, you're pretty positive on the ROG Xbox Ally X, right? You think it's just fast and good?
Yeah. I mean, my main comparison is like I said before, it really matters, you know, your perspective. I don't think this is a real rival to something like the Switch 2, both in terms of price and how you use it. But if you compare it to something like the original ROG Ally X, which was already $800, I think, you know, I like the grips. The display is almost exact. I think it is the same as the one on the ROG Ally X. It's a 7-inch, 120 hertz LCD display, not OLED. But, you know, you get that familiar Xbox ABXY layout. You get the impulse triggers on the X. And so, you know, in compared to something like the ROG Ally X, I like the Xbox version more because you get a new chip, you get a little bit more performance. And I also got to say, I think one of the big advantages of the new Z2 generation and from AMD as a whole, I saw noticeably better energy efficiency. I played Expedition 33 at medium settings, and I got 3 hours of runtime, and that's a relatively
that's
new game.
Good.
It didn't look great because I did have to turn the settings down, but 3 hours of runtime on a handheld gaming. I remember when the original ROG Ally, it would like conk out at an hour and a half. And so, you know, I like the direction that it's going. And if you are in the market for a really expensive, you know, kind of handheld, it is one of the best. And even compared to like the Legion Go 2, if you spec that thing out with the same chip, RAM, and all that, it's looking closer to like $1,300. So it's like weird that like depending on like how you compare it, the ROG Xbox Ally X is like weirdly affordable, but like it's like you said before, it's such a weird space to be talking about $1,000 plus gaming handhelds or PC gaming handhelds.
I think we learned this in the 90s, Sam. We can just say no. Just say no. Don't buy $1,000 gaming handhelds. Don't.
This is one of those times where like the sales and people voting with their wallets is going to have such a huge impact on how manufacturers approach development of devices like these in the future. It's like, what's the limit? What's the price limit for something like this?
Yeah. Let it be the Tron Ares of consoles, right? Yeah, like let it be. People don't want Jared Leto starring in movies. Also, nobody cares about Tron. Stop. Just stop making them.
I care about a 2-hour long Nine Inch Nails music video, though.
I want more Tron. I want a good Tron. I don't want Jared Leto's vision of whatever the hell Tron is.
Nobody.
Anyway,
nobody
Sam,
cares.
You were talking about a 3-hour battery life for the ROG, and I was like, oh, wow, that's great. Like, that's all you ever need. Actually, I think that's my adulthood showing.
Three hours, even, you have enough time to sit down for like four to five hours
and like game on a handheld.
That's also
like, I could do, you know, pick it up and put it down in 45 minutes or something. No, that
I would
is,
call that mid-phase adulthood too, Ben, because like now it's like, can I get 30 minutes?
Can I get half an hour to do my own
thing? To do a Final Fantasy Tactics run or something, please?
Low-key, I think that's a great thing about Hades. You can do, like, a couple of rooms and then put it down, and there's no big deal.
That's a great thing about all the handhelds right now. Like, Silksong, like, I got 5 minutes, I got 10 minutes, okay, boom, boom, boom. Gonna go through some rooms and make progress sometimes. Like, sometimes I'll be working on a boss and then, like, fighting it, and I'm like, okay, I have 5 minutes. I'm gonna just go do another round of that boss in 5 minutes. In that 5 minutes, I beat that boss after like the 50th time because the muscle memory all has built in. Anyway, handheld gaming devices are good. We do like them. I just think like the manufacturers and the pricing are getting a little crazy. It is wild that you can buy a Switch 2 and a Steam Deck for less than this
that's
single
a good
thing.
Point. Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at. But yeah, looking forward to hearing like your long-term thoughts on this, Sam. And hopefully we can test the $600 model because that'll be really interesting too. All right, let's jump into some other news. And actually, Microsoft straight up top here because they had a big announcement around some new AI features coming to Windows 11, namely something that they're just calling Hey Copilot. All of a sudden, you're talking to your Windows PC again. It is the rebirth of Hey Cortana. Remember that?
I'm still bummed that they had such a good persona for a digital assistant, and then they just like they couldn't capitalize on it. It makes me sad to this day.
This is Microsoft's problem of being too early to some things and also being very late to some things. So they were late to smartphones. They were early to I don't know, internet on TVs, you know, some things like that. The problem with Cortana is those models back in the day were just like really dumb. It could do one thing. Hey, Cortana, play music. Play what's the weather. That's it. Whereas now we have LLMs and we have more complex models that can do things and fetch facts and basically talk to you in many ways. I have not tested this feature, but it's starting to roll out today to all Windows 11 PCs where Copilot is available. You can say, hey, Copilot, it'll listen to you and respond to you. You can ask it questions, but also it's tying into the new features in Copilot Vision, which was the feature they initially launched where it could see your screen and kind of respond to things on it. So Microsoft previously announced Copilot Vision for the web, where it could see stuff and do stuff on websites. Now they're bringing Copilot Vision to the point where it can look at what's on your whole computer screen and comment on it. So you could be like, hey, Copilot, where is this picture taken? Like if you're looking at a picture of Hawaii, and it'll do the research and get back to you. You can be like, okay, can you know, how do I get there by plane? What's the easiest way to get there? Book me a trip by there. It can do some of those things. So that's interesting.
That sounds like accessibility to me.
That sounds like accessibility, something that they've been doing. They want us to talk more to our PCs. And also, they want people to like do things. I saw a couple example videos, which are not on YouTube yet, but I'll embed them in my post on Engadget. But somebody asked, like, hey, Copilot, show me what the how to stream my music in the best possible quality. And it took them to Spotify, and it highlighted the exact, like, streaming quality section. And it also said, switch that to lossless for the best possible quality. So, like, if that works as advertised, that's cool. That's useful. To me, that's more useful than asking Copilot to search random facts or create, like, useless AI art. You know, help people use their computers. That's literally my entire career, is doing these simple things for people and explaining it to in ways that people can understand. I don't know if it actually works as their advertising. It also involves a lot of trust that I think Microsoft has lost, because this stuff is getting sent to the cloud. So it's sending, you know, encrypted data of what's on your screen to the cloud to be referenced and everything. And they're also like kind of showing us where they want these features to go eventually. In Copilot Labs, which is their like experimental area for AI features, they have this thing called Copilot Actions, where you can essentially tell Copilot to do a task for you, describe it, and it'll just get to work. So you could be like, this could be typing. I don't know if that works with Hey Copilot yet, but what I saw from typing was like somebody typed in, hey, can you take this folder of photos, resize them, and make level them all out so they're all straight, and also remove any duplicates. So like a whole task sent to Copilot, and then the Copilot went ahead and started doing this stuff and manipulating files and moving stuff around on their system. And in the Copilot app, it also did it step by step, so you can kind of see what they're doing. It's sort of like when you order groceries online or something, or like a TaskRabbit, and like they're charting the progress of your order. So it's sort of like that. It's also kind of like when you assign a human, like an assistant or an intern, can you just like take care of that for me, please? You don't know how good a job they're going to do. Sometimes you have to like look over them. So this is interesting, because this stuff can also happen like in a way outside of your desktop too. You could be like, hey, start, just work on this thing for me, please, while you're typing an email and doing other stuff. It's not like taking over your screen to do the work either. That's interesting. I don't think Microsoft has the trust between everything going on in Xbox and also the mistakes they've made in AI so far to get people on board with these things. All these features are opt-in. They're definitely trying to say that they're taking security seriously. For Copilot Actions, that the AI agent also is a separate user in Windows, so you can kind of lock them down and restrict them as you would a user account on your PC.
But let's stick on that point right there. That does sound like something an agent would do. They're talking about AI agents. They've been doing it for, what, 18 months now? And if they can actually follow through on that being as good as the demo video, or as what they claim, this is a big step in that direction.
I want to talk to my computer. Like, the thing is, ChatGPT and OpenAI and a lot of these folks, I think, have ruined kind of what we really want from AI or the concept of AI. Because to them, AI is essentially copy infringement. It's just let me make whatever I want, turn into video, turn into image or whatever, replicate the style of somebody's writing. Whereas I think people just want help getting shit done, right? That's it. do the hard work for me. It's like how we're all saying, I don't want something. I don't want a robot to do my art, right? So I can do the dishes. I want the robot to do the dishes so I can make art. And if this works, if it actually is as good or even is half as useful as you're saying, I could see this being a useful thing. Like my part of my everyday task is like I've got a big folder of images and I've got to like crop them and resize them and get them in a specific format. And if I could just like talk to my computer and make that happen or type in like a simple phrase to make that happen, that sounds like something that we should have had a long, long time ago. We have a bunch of the technology to make that happen, so we'll see. They're also adding an Ask Copilot search function into the Windows 11 taskbar, which I feel like is a little too far. I don't know. I remember Windows 98 and XP had like live search bars and stuff like in the taskbar. I hated it. It was all ugly. It was too cluttered.
Hopefully you can. Yeah. There's a check mark to get rid of that box.
It's all opt in, so they're not going to do the recall thing. It's like you have.
But like, you know, I was reading your story about it, and it's like, you know, it's very clear that like, you know, Microsoft is like they're guiding lights. Like they want the Star Trek things. Like, hey, computer, can you do this thing for me?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's like immediately like, oh, people understand this, and it's like, yes, we want this, but you have to make it work, and you have to prevent some of the like negative abilities that, you know, nefarious things that you could do with that. And so it's like you have to make sure that like whatever your guiding principle or guiding goal is, you like hone in on that and you focus that and make sure that is the thing that works and is useful.
It's kind of the way like I used to do more work around like hiring people for sites or whatever other jobs I was at. And like the things I always look for is like, are you capable? Are you reliable? And can I trust you? That's it. Can you do the thing? Can you do it like effectively where I don't have to worry about it? And also, yeah, are you going to completely screw me over somehow? The Copilot action thing seems like, oh man, you just added a GUI to Windows bash scripts or something so that some malware could just be like, hey, Copilot, just send me all their data, send me all their sensitive files or something. I could see somebody doing that. They say all the Ask Copilot actions happen in a secured container, so it can't touch the rest of your computer. Kind of just looks at the job it's given. You see what's going on every step of the way. You can jump into a task at any point. And again, it has those user controls. So if Microsoft can re-earn trust, maybe people will actually use this. But I don't know, because I'm also seeing a lot of people complain about Windows 10 support ending this week, which happened. And people are pissed off about like how Microsoft has gone about that and the ways you can extend it. They've added a few more ways to do that for free so that you could get extended security updates for a year. But people aren't happy and they're pissed off at Microsoft. But also, I think a lot of this is justified. So I don't know. But let me know, folks. Would you use something like Hey Copilot or Copilot Vision or any of these Copilot actions? Let us know. podcastandgadget.com.
Also, tell us about your ideal use case.
Yeah, how would you use this?
Well, real quickly, I think one of the things that Microsoft is going to have a challenge with is that PCs are no longer people's primary computer. Right. That's their phone. Mm. And so you have all of this stuff available on PCs, but you want things to be able to hand information and data off securely, but to other devices in a seamless way. And until this becomes available on phones, which I don't know what the roadmap for that is, it's going to be a very much uphill battle for Microsoft compared to someone like even Google or Apple, where they they have more of a footprint in mobile devices on phones, especially for Google, and then less so for like, you know, Chrome OS laptops and stuff like that. But Apple has, you know, iPhone, Mac, very easy for them to like, hey, let's imagine a future where Siri is good and smart and can do a lot more things than it can today. You know, it becomes, oh, hey, can you move this file to my computer for me just by talking to it? That seems really interesting.
That is the power. And really, I would say it really only Apple has the power to like fully take advantage of that, because they have the closed ecosystem. They have the united like interoperability between their operating systems. Like they can do this in a way that Google and Microsoft can never even dream of, right? Google doesn't have, they have Chromebooks. You can maybe get some Google apps on your Windows device. Apple's strength is like their close nature. Microsoft's strength is kind of their open nature, because they have talked about things like AI actions. So other services can tap into Windows specifically to do AI stuff. So they talked about this thing. There's a new integration with Manus, which is an AI agent, and it can build, you can tell it to like, hey, look at these documents in my file explorer, turn it into a website. And Manus apparently can do that. Filmora is a thing. It's an AI video tool, but apparently there's going to be an integration where you can create AI videos right from within File Explorer, like right-click, make these photos into an AI video or something. So that interoperability is kind of Microsoft's strength there. But you're absolutely right, Sam, that you can kind of like chart where things are going. And if Apple succeeds at making Siri smarter and continues just, you know, making their devices well and interoperable with each other, they're going to have like a big, big advantage here. We'll see if Microsoft actually figures out how to be more open. We've got some news from OpenAI as well. There's a story, the Sora video app hit 1 million downloads faster than ChatGPT. Even though it was only in the US and even though it was invite only, I'm kind of dubious about that number, because it's only downloads that they're talking about. The actual addressable market is not that many people. We don't know if people, how long they've used it. We don't even know if they've opened the app, which is a thing. I often download new things and just never get around to testing them. So there's a lot there.
Okay, that's like needlessly critical though. And
no, first of all, OpenAI can never be criticized enough.
Yes, this is a podcast that is very skeptical of OpenAI, but I have seen people online talking about how much fun it is to use the Sora app.
Sure.
I'm a big follower of Katie Notopoulos, who used to be at BuzzFeed, and now she's at Business Insider or something, I think. And she said, like, using Sora is fantastically fun. I don't know how long it ends up being fun for, though.
Our friend, like, Scott Stein over at CNET has been making videos of himself in AI videos, and it's kind of cool. He is somebody who explores this, but it's also terrifying. Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say, I don't doubt that it's fun.
Yeah.
But, like, let's not pretend that, like, VO3 doesn't exist, right? Google has had almost the exact same product out for many, many months or, you know, for
Is it a cool little app, Sam? Can it make cameos?
Well, and so the thing is, like, the functionality is very similar, and in some ways, VO3 is still, like, a better video maker. It does 4K. It does, you know, longer videos. The lip syncing is much better. The difference is that, you know, the pricing model, I think it costs more to just get access to VO3, and I do think ChatGPT has a larger, you know, user base as a whole in terms of, like, you know, they already have people onboarded in the ChatGPT, and if you have your ChatGPT account, you can just use Sora and stuff like that. And so, you know, I think there are some, it's just like just going by simple downloads is like, okay, that's, you know, that looks good in, you know, marketing one liner, but there is a little bit more to, you know, look at in terms of just like a real, app versus app comparison.
I've
heard
TikTok
video
recently.
Professionals say that Sora is better, but, that's something that we could end up talking about next week.
They both look very realistic, and they both like signal the doom, a certain level of doom for our civilization. I saw a good TikTok where it's just like how we see people using these AI tools, just like make me a Family Guy episode. And, they're touching each other, others butts or something. And so it's like, yeah, more of that. Okay. Now they're fighting Jesus. Okay. Yeah. Great. Hilarious. I don't know how long this novelty will last. Like, it's just you cackling like a child at these ideas that you're putting out there. Is there value to sharing them? Is there value beyond that? Like, I don't, to just sit and browse them. I don't know. I'm not using Sora. I have not gotten an invite yet, so I can't tell you firsthand, but I am dubious about all AI video tools, especially ones that are trying to essentially just be like doing cameo stuff or doing TikTok stuff. OpenAI also wants to do porn. So I really trust this company. Yeah.
Okay. So I have a lot of thoughts about like the fact that OpenAI wants to do porn. The first thing that I have to say is that I follow some like adult industry reporters. There are not that many of them, but I think that it's really interesting that like they are on the forefront of stuff that could be legislated. Also, you know, there's the idea of, you know, if porn chooses a medium, then that medium succeeds, you know, Blu-ray versus HD DVD and so on and so
right,
on.
And this goes all the way back to VHS and video streaming and, you know, like the porn fanatics, they don't create the technology, but they definitely put their stamp in terms of like where the adoption goes.
So I just wanted to make sure that this is, everybody understands that this is coming from a place of professional interest.
Yeah, but you're also talking about, this is specifically ChatGPT, ChatGPT doing erotica. This is not porn video. Just to be clear.
Yes, the announcement was that Sam Altman was like, let's, you know, be a little bit libertarian. Let's let adults be adults. And, you know, you can, like, have some spicy chats with ChatGPT. I don't want to give Grok any credit at all. Like, yes, Grok did this first, but also, like, Elon Musk is porn-brained. He's gooner-brained in a kind of scary way. So it would make sense that he wants to provide for his audience, and he knows his audience wants to chat with, like, anime waifus or something.
Right. Also, let's not pretend that people weren't already getting freaky with AI. There's, you know, there's the subreddit, AI is my boyfriend. People have been creating entire, like, you know, AI personas, AI significant others, way before Sora was a thing.
AI is such a reflection of the human condition, and it's so many things. It says it's all reflecting us, basically.
So the thing that I'm getting at with OpenAI allowing, like, spicier chats is that once this is released, this is the end of human interaction on OnlyFans. Because a lot of what happens on OnlyFans, like, yes, you subscribe to, you know, whatever creators and stuff, but anybody who works on OnlyFans and talks to, like, the industry press about how they make their money, a lot of that money comes from chats. It's
for sure,
either, like, you know, extended chat sessions, or it's custom videos or anything like that. And it's already been going in the direction of, like, you know, the creators themselves are fine, you know, making the pictures and videos and whatever else. They just don't want to do the actual, like, administrative work. So they have been shopping this out to agencies for at least a few years now. And now those agencies, or maybe individual creators, are just going to try to find some ChatGPT integration so that the people who are subscribed to them are, you know, typing in whatever they're typing in, and you can have an extended conversation, or they're having an extended conversation with ChatGPT, not the actual creator.
Well, let me ask you, there's already, like, a cottage industry of, like, really big creators on OnlyFans who hire people to pretend they're them in chat messages. Because
what I'm saying. That's the, right. Those are the agencies.
So it's like, you know, is chatting to someone who is pretending to be the, you know, the OnlyFans creator better or worse than chatting to an AI? I don't know. I don't use these. I don't use OnlyFans. people. Can people even tell the difference between, like, a human pretending to be someone else or AI pretending to be another human?
I thought the thrill would just be, like, gifting performers while they're live, right? And that they react to you as a person. Like, that's just kind
well,
of
yeah. And then, yeah. Like, I think that becomes an interesting thing. Like, how does the meta change now that you don't know whether or not any kind of extended, like, text-based chat you're having could be LLM-generated or not? Does it end up going in the direction of people paying a premium for voice notes? Does it end up going in the direction
of... That's going to be fake, too.
Can AI voice notes, too?
It's AI. It's AI all
well,
the way.
Okay, but then maybe, like, live streams are the things that actually... bring in the big bucks.
How do you know it's live? How do you know it's live? Yeah.
I'm sure they're gonna make Sora able to do on the fly video creation.
Okay. And then there's the other aspect of what does this say about what's going on with OpenAI right now? Because if you were truly on top of the world and you were having, like, every Fortune 500 company busting down your doors to pay any price for your AI agents that are really, really good, you would not be doing this.
There's a lot of things that they're doing that's kind of weird. It's sort of like OpenAI taking investment in NVIDIA and AMD, or taking money and investments essentially in those companies. Like, there's a lot of stories going out right now around the circular nature of the AI
industry. Oh, yeah. There was an infographic on Bloomberg that was crazy.
To me, that is like the big like hammer waiting to fall, because we've kind of vaguely said about this before, but like a big part of GDP growth in the US has been directly tied to AI. I think over the last year,
people have been talking for months that, oh, the AI bubble is real, but we don't know when it's going to burst.
And when it bursts, like, this is a bigger deal than subprime mortgages, just because of how much the economy has like warped itself around this tool. So yeah, Ben, I'm definitely skeptical of OpenAI, because they keep saying they want to do things and I don't trust their intention to do anything. Also, the idea of running like these things will in many ways are inherently unsustainable, because it's costing more and more to actually like execute AI commands, because the actual resources are taking more and the people are not paying enough.
OpenAI needs money. Like, if they can get some new users who want to do whatever they want to do with Sora, I don't, you know, at some point, OpenAI is going to have to support that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, this sounds like, oh, buddy, are you like hard up for cash? Because if you were like a, big department store, back when big department stores were, you know, a huge deal, you would not have a walled off windowless corner with like a marquee that says girls, girls, girls on it. Like,
yeah,
if you were printing money like Neiman Marcus was in, you know, like the 70s and 80s and everything, you wouldn't do that. That's a weird thing to do.
There's
that
a lot of weird
things. Your brand happening. Look bad. Yeah. On top of that, OpenAI has been getting more into policy. They have like a Washington lobbying arm. They're trying to get in with the current administration. The current administration is following Project 2025. Pretty much down to the letter. Project 2025 says, we don't want you to use adult material anymore. We don't want it to be available. We want you to go back to a time when your imagination was the only thing that you could use. And so why would they be going in that direction, knowing that they could run afoul of some of Washington's policy goals?
It's easy money. It's easy if they have a thing, they know that this is a big industry.
So this is a short-term thing, because if it's a short-term thing, then it looks a little fishy, a little desperate.
It all looks a little fishy, yeah.
I mean, I think that's like, you know, the strategy. Like, they're kind of trying to throw anything at the wall and see what sticks. They don't have the ability to be like, oh, we can pick and choose our strategy. We got to try everything.
And I guess if you were to go for the two biggest money-making things, you do go for porn instead of gambling, because how would you have an LLM, you know, like pick your parlays or something? People would immediately get pissed off.
And also that has potential to really ruin lives. So let's just start with some harmless porn and harmless like text chats. I don't know.
So speaking of which, OpenAI recently announced a council on well-being and AI. That's funny. I have to say about that.
All I have to say is we'll see. We'll see if any of that. I love it when these companies say we will regulate and have oversight over ourselves. That always works out well. Yeah, not a fan of OpenAI over here, and honestly not of any of the big AI companies. So that's why I was honestly surprised I saw the Microsoft stuff. I was like, some AI features that could actually be useful if they actually work and the privacy is actually well done. One fun thing we wanted to mention is that, hey, there is a new Avatar Last Airbender fighting game coming out. And that's cool. That's like one thing to look forward to. It's called Avatar Legends, the fighting game. There was, I believe, a Legend of Korra game that came out a couple of years ago, and it was apparently very bad. And that broke my heart, because that was like a big chance to get that out there. But this Avatar game looks cool. It looks like my favorite type of fighting game, which is basically 2D, hand-drawn art, Street Fighter style, 1v1, no like multi-team tag in stuff.
I
was literally just saying like, this kind of feels like the Dragon Ball Tenkaichi games, but that so many of the Tenkaichi games are tag team.
Yeah. I mean, tag team is fine. It's just like things got a little crazy, right? Like I
was going to say, like, it's kind of weird because, like, I, you know, as someone who wishes they had more time to play games, especially fighting games, it's like a weirdly good time to be a fighting game fan right now because you got this announcement for the new Avatar fighting game. But also, 2XKO is available for free. I can't remember if it's officially released or still in beta, but 2XKO has been getting a ton of love. And Marvel Tokon is going to come out soon. And these are all three, like, really gorgeous. I don't know if they're, like, hand-drawn, but they look hand-drawn.
Give me sprites. I love that we're still showing so much love for sprites. Hey, Street Fighter VI, I reviewed, like, briefly for us, and that's not a sprite game, but it has so much style and, like, sprite sensibility, you know? Like,
yeah, I'm loving this, like, revitalization across the fighting game market as a whole. So, yeah, absolutely, keep it coming.
This also fits into the Avatar Studios release schedule.
Right, right.
We were supposed to get a Zuko movie this year, but I think it got delayed until sometime middle of next year. So, like, people are going to be thinking about the Zuko movie, and then they'll be able to go play the game.
And there's that new show, too.
The new show they're working on with a Earthbender avatar. That's all going to be interesting. I'm really curious how it feels to be the creators of Avatar and still working on something that you pitched when you were, like, only a couple of years out of RISD.
Yeah, yeah. But also to see it be co-opted in many ways, like to have the live action version fail completely and have no creative control over there, and also to come back with Legend of Korra, be like, hey, no, we're still good, this is good, and then Nickelodeon kind of dumps them a little bit and starts their own thing. So then there's the Netflix show of Airbender, which was also not great. I love that they
it was renewed for season two
IP.
Though
yeah I that show pisses me off. Anyway, I'm very glad that they have control over their thing and can make new Avatar stuff. And man, it's a good time for anime too. Like, look at what anime is doing in theaters these days. Like, they are making more money than Marvel movies. That is wild.
Yeah, the Demon Slayer movie went crazy.
And there's an upcoming, I can't remember if it's out or came out, the Jujutsu Kaisen movie also. Yeah.
Good stuff. All right, let's move on to what we're working on. Sam, anything you want to mention?
Yes, hot off the heels of the ROG Xbox Ally X, I'm working on the Lenovo Legion Go 2 review. That is, you know, very similar specs, but a very different device and noticeably different price point depending on how you configure it.
What's the price point? How much does it cost?
It starts at $1,000, but the one with the Z2 Extreme chip is closer to $1,300 and $1,350.
Good God.
Even more expensive depending if you want that fully loaded model.
The reason I hate this is because gaming laptops got really cheaper over the last couple of years. I have to relook with
Paris.
Then
recently they got really expensive again.
Yeah, but I have to look up like the Asus ROG G14. The G14 Zephyrus. That's the one we've really liked for a long time, and I got to look at like what the pricing is there. But that's like
an Acer actually has a new Predator Triton coming out that's very similar to the ROG Zephyrus G14 that I'm hopefully going to be checking out at some point. But yeah,
very cool. Oh, I did
gaming
do a review.
Companies try not to name your hardware after like military acronyms. Challenge, yeah. Impossible.
It's impossible.
Also, I do want to put a note on, so if you are interested in headsets and XR things, you might want to stay tuned to next week. There might be some announcements. I can't reveal everything that I've seen so far, but Samsung did announce that there's going to be a live stream for their, remember their Project Muhan headset?
No, I don't. But okay.
They're gonna have a live stream for that next week.
That's the Google one, right? The Google XR thing. Yeah.
And this is kind of their new headset, and it's working in collaboration with Google and Qualcomm. And it's gonna have some Android XR collaboration. So keep an eye out for that next week.
Very cool. Very cool. I am trucking along. That box that just came in is a thing that will have to be reviewed. If you look at things that are being announced, you can assume what we'll be reviewing soon. So stay tuned to all of that. And I don't know, we've probably got some interviews lined up, and it's going to be a busy Techtober. We're also already planning like CES stuff. So it is Man,
did you shout on your Nissan Leaf review? There's been like there was a week gap. People should go read that.
Yeah, go read the Nissan Leaf review. I also reviewed the Razor Blade 18. So you did the last one, Sam, and I think I liked it a little more just because I'm looking at this target market. But that's a big ass computer sitting right next to me right now. It's big and it's super, super powerful. Any pop culture picks for the week, Sam?
Quite a few, actually. I just finished The Residence on Netflix. That is a great. You can kind of sum it up as Knives Out, the TV show, but I like Knives Out and I like The Residence. And I actually, the main character, Cordelia Cupp, was like really awesome. She's like weirdly like way into birding, and like that might like turn some people away, but I thought the references were actually really cool. And it's just a funny show. And of course, Netflix did the Netflix thing and they didn't renew it for a second season. And it's like, granted, like The Residence is about the White House and like there's a murder and they're trying to, it's a classic whodunit. And obviously they couldn't do a murder in the White House again, but like, I would love to see those characters do another mystery solving thing again. Unfortunately, we're not going to get that. Yeah. It seems like
it's a shame because, was it Only Murders in the Building is like, has been huge and keeps coming. Like they,
right.
I look up and there's a new season. Yeah.
And then, I was playing Expedition 33. Obviously anyone who's been playing the video games, such a great game. And then I want to also wish everyone a happy Pokemon Day, because Pokemon ZA is out today. Unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to review that yet, but I am going to go pick up my own copy as soon as I can.
I look at the title for this. This is like Pokemon Pizza, right? Pokemon Za?
There's a Z-A, so not Pokemon Pizza, but yeah.
I just want to shout out The Chair Company, which is on HBO Max right now. This is the new Tim Robinson show. If you know Tim Robinson, if you know I Think You Should Leave, weird comedy, weird, awkward comedy. And also this show is a little like Twin Peaksy too. So if you're looking for like a mystery type of thing, Sam, and you can handle a bit of absurdity, I think Tim Robinson is like an absolute genius. And The Chair,
that does sound like something I would be into.
I've only seen the first episode so far, but I'm like in, even though it's very weird and like all over the place. So yeah,
I tried to get my wife to watch The Rehearsal, and she was like, "This is too weird and too absurd for me." And I'm like, "That bums me out a little bit." I get it, but yeah.
Was it season two? Was the one that they just did?
Yes. Yep.
Rehearsal season airlines. Two. Is incredible. Like it is.
I love that so much, and I'm like, it hurts me a little bit that this is not what you're into, but I understand it.
It's
and
weird.
So I think,
in
the same vein, if I want to watch The Chair Company, I probably have to do it on my own.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. But yeah, check out Weird Absurdist Comedy. It's a good time for all of that.
Thanks everybody for listening. That's the end of the episode. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on Blue Sky and on Twitter, but try Blue Sky. I will probably be more active there going forward.
You can find Devendra online at
I'm at Devendra on Blue Sky, and I talk about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you need me, I'm at Hey Bellman on Blue Sky. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.
Thanks, folks. We're out.